This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Good afternoon, it's 5 minutes past one and you're listening to Joy 94.9. This is Cravings. My name's Hilary McNevin and I'm sitting in this afternoon for Pete Dillon, who's off teaching the masterclass. This afternoon we're talking to girls, women about food writing. It's going to be a great show. Pete's cropping in and thanks for joining us. We certainly are. It's almost 6 minutes past one. My name's Hilary McNevin. Welcome to Joy 94.9 on this swelteringly hot Saturday afternoon. I'm sitting in this afternoon for Pete Dillon, who this is his show, but he is actually doing other food and wine things this afternoon at the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, moderating, a masterclass or two there. So he will be calling in the next 10 minutes or so to partake in our chat today and also just to let us know what's happening over there in the festival headquarters. Now, before we get to the show, we've got some housekeeping to do, which is really fun. We have three prizes to give away today on Joy 94.9 at Cravings. We've got two, and these are member prizes, might I say, just for members. So if you're a Joy member, please feel free to call in. We've got two family passes to the 2013 Herb and Chilli Festival Romantic Nursery in Wandon from the 16th and 17th of March from 10 a.m. And this is a great little segue for me to introduce our guest today and my co-host, because she's going to tell us about the other prize. Mary Jane Daffy, welcome.
Thank you. Very excited to be here, I must say.
Firstly, happy birthday.
Oh, thank you.
Couldn't
think of a better place to be spending it, I have to say, Hilary.
It's perfect. And we have another prize, but you're here today to talk to us about food writing. We're going to get to that.
Yeah.
But tell us first about the other prize that we've got today.
This is a great one. This is a double pass to Are You Game for a real food, real wine lunch. It's on Saturday the 16th of March in the Strathbogie Ranges, and you'll be taking the blue train from Melbourne's Southern Cross right through to the heart of the Strathbogie Ranges and doing some really fun butchery demonstrations and three-course lunch and lots of lovely loveliness.
So Are You Game, basically. So what is, we're playing on the themes, we need some answers from our listeners, from Joy 94.9 members. Basically, for the Herb and Chilli Festival, where there'll be over 40 stalls of chilli and herb products for tasting and purchasing, and lots of live entertainment and fun for the whole weekend, we want to know what fires you up. So that's our question to you. That could be what annoys you, what motivates you, just what gets you out of bed in the morning, what fires you up, please. Your answers, please SMS to 0427 Joy 949. That's 0427 569 949. Or email onair at joy.org.au. Or you can phone 1300 Joy 949. So what fires you up? You have a chance to win a family pass for a weekend at the Cherbin Hilly.
The Cherbin Hilly.
So I'm just going to say it because my mouth does not want to say herb and chili. So, yes, that's yours, but Mary Jane.
Fantastic. And exactly the same number, 1-300-JOY-949 or 0427-JOY-949. And my question is, who are you game to hunt? Now, that can be anyone. It's a bit of a curly question there, isn't it? So, pass prize, are you game for a real food, real wine lunch, Saturday 16th of March in Strathbogie? Yeah.
Are they
Rangers
hunting for good or for evil?
Well, the answers will only tell.
So please feel free to send in your answers, and we'd love to, by the end of the show, so by 2 o'clock this afternoon, we'll announce the winners of that. But now, down to more serious issues. Food writing. Mary Jane, I've asked you in today. All the chefs are at the Food and Wine Festival. I'm not talking dishes. I'm talking about how to write about dishes.
And you were left with me, weren't you, Hilary?
Yeah. Pete was left with asking me.
Pete even left, didn't he?
I said to Pete, even, you know, the chefs, no one's around, so Mary Jane and I'll do it.
Yes. We're actually taking over the airwaves.
We're talking, well, lucky ears out there. We're talking to Larissa Dubetsky later, who is the Age senior restaurant critic and also the senior reviewer for the Age Good Food Guide. So she has a very significant role in food writing.
Huge role.
Melbourne and in the country, really. And I've recently, you know, there's been a few changes in my life in that terms. My kids have changed school recently. And what it's got me really thinking about it, because a lot of the parents I have met and other people, I've met lovely people, but I get this question often, socially and professionally. Food writer, that's a great job. How do you get into that? I want to get into that.
A lot of hard work and determination.
Is that? Tell us a bit about how you got into food writing.
Well, I think, for me, food, and it was funny because you asked me this question yesterday over the phone and I had the night to think about it. And food has always been a part of my life. I grew up on a farm in the Otways. Mm-hmm. So I think Mum and Dad were doing the paddock to plate philosophy even when we were kids. So it was, you know, we'd kill our own sheep and kill a cow and you know, serve it on the plate. And that might sound horrific, but that's what we were doing. We had a huge vegetable garden. So I was brought up with food in my life. Yes. And then, you know, of course you have to get a job when you're 15. So I washed plates. I worked in a Greek restaurant in Lawn. And that
was this when you were at school?
Yeah, when I was 15. So just, you know, clearing plates and doing that sort of thing. Yep. And then dabbled in kitchens, moved to Melbourne. And then, you know, just so ingratiated into that restaurant hospitality world, which I love.
Yes.
But I also loved writing. So I did a journalism course and then I merged my two loves.
So how long did you work in restaurants before you went and studied journalism?
I actually worked in restaurants the whole way through. So mm-hmm. I was doing a uni degree, as many a student out there would know, mm-hmm. and working at the same time. And in fact, I even when I became a journalist, I was still working part-time because I loved it so much and it was hard to get out of. But now, obviously, a full-time food writer.
So tell us who you write for.
Well, I've recently gone freelance in the last 6 months, mm-hmm. which has been very exciting. So I started on community publications, the Melbourne Times.
Yes.
And that was my first food reviewing job. I was a full-time journalist there, though. And then now Epicure, Broadsheet, Royal Auto, the Weekly Review are my main ones.
Main sources of income. Because it's interesting. I find often people say to me, you know, how did you do this job? And I worked front of house in restaurants for 15 years as well. And you don't necessarily have to work in restaurants, though, do you?
No.
But the thing is that for me, it helped a lot. I actually did a lot of wine study, managed floors and had writing and food writing in the back of my head all the time.
Absolutely.
And sort of, but for me, it was when what triggered me to do it was when I became a mum. So when my daughter was 6 months old, I went to RMIT and studied part-time that way. But I think, what do you think are the most misunderstood things about being a food writer? Because I find a lot of, even someone said to me recently, I would love to walk into a restaurant and everyone know me and everyone do all these great things for me. And I said, but then that's not really doing your job, because how can you review a restaurant if you're not getting a real sense of...
It doesn't happen that way. Well, not to me anyway.
No.
Maybe I'm not well known enough. But no, well, yeah, and if you're listening, please. No, I'm joking.
But we'll put a photo up of it later.
Yeah,
so
and maybe that's why,
like.
Because actually in all the publications I write for and review for, my photo isn't there. So I'm anonymous when I go in to cafes and restaurants. And it's wonderful because you get the real experience. And I think that translates to the reader. You want a real experience.
It's not about ego, though, is it? This is what I think a lot of people... It's look, food writing or any kind of writing is creative, and a lot of creative industries are highly competitive. So you have to be prepared to do a lot of work for not very much money for a very long time. It's like fashion
very
or music or anything at all. You actually have to be prepared to say yes to anything that will get you writing or writing or experiencing things and tasting things and being challenged. You can't. We're going to have to talk about blogging at some point in this hour as well, because I think a lot of people just go in unannounced or go in thinking that to criticise a restaurant is what it's all about, rather than actually being constructive. They walk into a place and sort of think, I'm going to just find everything that's wrong with this, rather than, I've never walked into a restaurant, I don't know about you, but never walked into a restaurant thinking I'm going to look for what is wrong. Like when you approach a review, do you ever feel that way?
No, well, I think it's the joy of being able to do what we do as well. And we want to have the best experience that that restaurant or cafe can possibly provide. That's what it's about. It's about sort of championing the best of our industry. And there is so much that is good out there.
Oh, I can't wait to keep talking about this. But look, it's 14 minutes past one. You're listening to Cravings on Joy 94.9.
Great shows, great topics, great radio. Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Cravings on Joy 94.9. My name is Hilary McNevin, and I got incredibly tongue-tied in the first segment today. But, you know, there are chilies in the world and herbs. Not hillies and cherbs, but I'll forgive myself and move on. I have... Well, my I'm filling in for Pete Dillon, who is on the line, and I can't wait to speak to him. Pete, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well. What's happening at the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival?
It's the Masterclass weekend, so there are a whole raft of visiting international chefs, as well as some of our own homegrown product.
Yes.
Presenting classes all through the weekend, so three, four rooms working. So we've got three rooms with chefs and one that is... some nice matches of winemakers and food producers. So, yeah, look, it's going incredibly well. I've just finished the session with the Swedish chef, not the guy from the Muppet, a fellow by the name of Magnus Nielsen, who is...
yeah, he's a bit of a rock star, but I bet he's very incredibly interesting to listen to.
Yeah, he's just, you know, he's got this 12-seat restaurant. It's about 670 k's north of Stockholm. Mm-hmm. Half of the year, he's everything around him is frozen and under, you know, meters of snow.
Yes.
So he's just sort of talked us through this process of how he creates food and how he develops stuff given those extraordinary circumstances.
And what do you, were you actually moderating the session?
Yeah, I'm presenting for 2 days. So
so what does that mean? Like tell everyone out there, what do you do? Do you ask Magnus questions for the audience, or do you just moderate the question Q&As? What do you do?
I just basically try and manage the room, get people involved in the discussion with the chefs. So we started with Marty Boats this morning, who is a seasoned professional as far as doing these presentations, and he sort of took us through a whole bunch of... lessons on how to bone a pig and roll it and stuff, and we ate pork for breakfast, which was perfect.
How wonderful, pork for brekkie. Yeah. How is Marty? Marty would have been wonderful to watch.
Yeah, he was great. He was great. How's I hope MJ's behaving herself, Mary Jane, are you?
I'm sitting here very quietly, Pete Dillon, very quietly indeed, just busting at the sides.
Hey, before we go any further, I was going to sing, but I won't. Very happy birthday to you, Mary Jane.
I want the song, Pete. I want the song.
It's not going to happen. There are other people in this room.
Thank you, thank you.
Alistair McLeod sitting here looking at me, just shaking his head, saying, "Please don't sing. Please don't
sing." Do it in the privacy of your own home. At a dinner one night at Pete's house, we'll get out the candles and sing you happy birthday.
Oh, we'll get the guitars out, love.
That's it.
Get the bubbles out.
Get a bit of kumbaya. Snap.
Indeed.
So tell us, Pete, go on. What are you doing this afternoon? I want to talk to you about food writing too.
Yeah, sure. Aaron Turner from Loam in Drysdale is next up. And then I finished with the Three Blue Ducks, three very hot surfers from Sydney. They've got a restaurant in Bronte and, you know, there are women just wandering around swooning as we speak.
Do they bring their own groupies, or are their groupies just come wherever they go?
Look, wherever they go, it's almost obscene. And then another four sessions tomorrow, which are great. So Andrew McConnell in the morning, if people would know Andrew very well. Yep. The King of Parma, Massimo Spigaroli, is in as well.
Yes.
And then Alistair White, who's a British boy currently in Tassie, and he's doing all sweet stuff, which is going to be great. And then I'll finish with the beautiful Guillaume Brami.
Oh, what a wonderful day. Are you going to the Theatre of Ideas tomorrow? Are you involved in that?
No, I'm here in the Alto Room at the Langham running masterclasses, so I can't get away, which is a bit of a shame.
So, Pete, you do some food writing.
Yes, I do.
How did you get into it, and do you find it's not nearly as glamorous as people think?
Look, I'm a chef by trade. Regular listeners know that I have been in and around the business now for a sneeze sort of 30 years. Mm-hmm. So I started as a chef and worked in the industry. Hilary, you and I worked together 20 years ago.
Yes, when we were 12.
In a hotel, yeah, when we were 12.
Yeah.
and not and a day then, passed, mind you.
No.
And then I went to, decided when I came back to Melbourne that I wanted to be a journalist. It was always one of my things that I wanted to do. So whilst I went and worked at the ABC, I studied and became a journalist, and I've been able to get my finger in the Melbourne food pie, I guess, and I have the luxury, and it is a luxury, and it's a privilege to be able to write about something that I'm so deeply passionate about.
Do you think it's a misunderstood industry, as in people
Absolutely.
Think it's far more glamorous than it actually the reality is?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's hard work, mm-hmm. And I struggle when I go out for dinner with my other half. We try and go out for dinner and have date night as frequently as possible, but.
Yep.
We both become sort of quite critical and, taking photos and tweeting photos of our food. And we've actually got a rule that if we are on a date that we just don't, we don't write about it. It's just that simple because it becomes very difficult.
Because I think, well, for people often ask me that too, do you always critique things? And going out for a meal is one of my favourite things on earth to do. So I actually, the fact that I can go, I love it when I can go out and relax with my family and friends, but I also, and then I go out for work. I have very definite lines between the two. I can actually let my hair down easily because I just love being out there and eating and drinking.
I think you have to. Otherwise, every dining experience becomes work.
And yes. And the people, your personal friends actually can't, I don't know about you, but my two children are very vocal about, are we working, are you reviewing, or is this just for fun?
Exactly. And that's the tough thing. And look, there's been a stack of people in the room this morning, the likes of Jan Applebaum from Epicure.
Yes.
Matt Preston was in here asking some questions as well. I mean, I think it's more difficult for people like that whose whole life is about being in the public eye. I think we have it a little differently. I heard MJ talking just a few minutes ago about some anonymity because, the face isn't attached to the name in some respects. I think anybody photos on the back of the kitchen door, and that then becomes difficult because people know who you are, and I think we get treated slightly differently when we are known in that respect because they're trying to impress a little more. I don't know. I think that could be.
No, I think so. Well, I've eaten out with some people whose faces are well known, and and mine isn't. So I actually sort of think, and I notice a significant difference. In service, especially I like to go earlier than them, and just to even for 10 minutes or so to see how I'm treated and see the change as soon as my company joins me, because I find that quite a revelation.
It is. Now, look, I'm going to let you girls get back to it because you've got a lot to discuss, and I'm just wanted to call in and make sure you're behaving yourselves on the show. It's about the strength of it.
We are. We're calling Larissa in about 10 minutes or so and having a chat to
her,
and we're just going to talk about all the fun things, food, and writing about it.
And I do expect, because yesterday was International Women's Day and you're almost an all-female program today, that you're playing some music about women as well, are you?
Well, I'm playing Madonna.
And we're boogieing.
And we're going to dance.
We are going to have a boogie.
Is she a poof?
And it's dedicated to my sisters and all the women in my life, including you, Pete.
Oh, excellent. Nice to be an honorary sixth just for the day. Have fun, girls, and I'll catch up with you both soon.
Okay, bye, then,
Pete.
Bye.
All right, cheers.
Thanks, Pete. Okay, let's have a listen. Let's listen to Madonna now. This is burning up.
Joy 94.9.
It's 28 past one here on Joy 94.9. You're listening to Cravings. My name's Hilary McNevin and I am sitting in for Pete Dillon today, who is working at the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, moderating sessions with amazing chefs like Magnus Nilsson and Marty Boetz, and having a grand old time there. So while before we get on to the next segment of the show, I'd really like to call out to all the Joy FM members that we have the our prizes today. So we've got 2 family passes to the Herb and Chili Festival Romantic Nursery from 16th and 17th of March. And it just sounds like 2 great foodie days of lots and lots of fun. Tell us what fires you up. Send it in. And on 0427 Joy 949, that's 0427 569 949, or you can call the desk 1300 569 949. That's what fires you up. And Mary Jane Daffy, my co-host for the day, she has the other prize, which sounds amazing.
It's a fantastic, look, they're both fantastic prizes, and ones I'd love to get my sticky mitts on. So if you are a member, do phone in. I've got a double pass. Are you game for a real food, real wine lunch, Saturday 16th of March? What would you be doing if not this, I say?
I say.
My question is, who are you game to hunt?
Who are you going to hunt?
It's a curly one, but I think you could have some fun with it. So do call in.
Call in, text in, email in. Tell us who do you like to hunt or what fires you up. And you're in with a chance of winning some really, really great weekends away of eating and drinking. Now back to the show and back to food writing.
Yes. Now I'm going to take over the airwaves from you for a bit. And I want to know a bit about you, Hilary.
It's a coup d'etat.
How did you start out? And I guess what got you into it?
What got me into food writing? I mentioned just earlier that I worked in restaurants. I worked in restaurants, pretty formal ones actually, overseas in the UK. I worked at some places I was the only woman on the floor with lots of French and Italian formal waiters. And I remember once translating a menu that was in French, and a French guy said to me, "How do you know that? Not only are you an Australian, you're a woman." Like, wow. He had no idea that.
And what? When are we talking?
This was in the mid-90s.
Mid-90s.
So I'm 44 now.
Fantastic.
an older lady. But, so that was the mid-90s and I was travelling, but I stayed in London for quite a while. And just, I did a hospitality management course when I left school and I just loved restaurants. I was pretty tragic, actually. I was reading food magazines, Gourmet Traveller. I've kept a lot of them from the 80s when I was at school.
There's nothing wrong with being a food nerd,
yeah.
I say.
And it's been an awfully long time. And I just worked in restaurants and was crazy about them. I worked in...
Also studied wine, I hear.
I did quite a few sommelier courses and did some wine judging courses as well. When I was in London, I got really into one of my best friends, who's still one of my dearest friends, Pascal. She's back in France. She's a beautiful French woman. Just sort of... I asked her to immerse me basically into two regions. We focused on Burgundy and Bordeaux, just classic regions. And since then, my interest and love of wine has spread significantly. And I just... what I love about food and wine is they're both subjects you never stop learning about.
Yeah,
and I just... when I was married and I wanted to have children, I thought, how do I... And I did a little bit of playing around with writing before I had children and just sort of realised the more and more I wrote, I realised the more and more I needed to learn it and needed to go to uni and I needed to study. And you can't just write. Unless you're incredibly gifted. Some people can just sit down and write beautifully, but you need to workshop stuff. You need to be really brave and you need to stand in the middle of a room and read out work that might be incredibly close to you.
And you also need to let go, I've found, let go of your work.
Yes.
And know when to push that send button.
Exactly. Exactly right. And I think also in the context of, say, courses in university, you need to be able to take the criticism of that work, or someone just even saying that sentence doesn't work, or if you move that around, or if you cut it down by half, and be able to take that on board.
Absolutely.
Because if you can't do that, you can't work with an editor who might send something back to you and say, this isn't right, or can you rework this, or with a list of queries. And that's really normal. Sometimes it doesn't happen and the editor doesn't need anything more from your work, but sometimes an editor does. And you can't be pompous and big-headed about that. It's your job.
Yeah,
and,
I think you. I think you do definitely develop a thick skin, and learn to not take things personally necessarily. And in the end, it's in the best interest of everybody, the restaurant that you're reviewing, the owners, the sommelier, yourself personally, because you don't want to get facts, figures, anything.
And I think
wrong.
What's forgotten, Mary Jane, and what I have learned a lot, because I was a classic restaurant person who thought I can be a writer because none of the writers out there know. You know, I've heard a lot of people say this to me since. They constantly criticise Epicure and the Good Food Guide and all these things because they're not writing for them and they could do a better job.
Yes.
But once I studied it and once I learnt, you're creating actually something for a reader. You're not just writing for you. And perhaps that's about blogs, and we can talk about blogs a bit later. But you're not writing. You have to think of your readership, and that's what an editor does. An editor filters between you and the readership as well. But I write for Delicious Magazine, and I write for Epicure, and I write for Broadsheet. And for those three things, I write very differently.
Yes, I understand that completely.
But I still communicate and have my beliefs and have my philosophies, I suppose, if you will, and ethos. But I work very hard, but I have to write differently because each editor will notice if I'm not writing according for who we write for as a group of people.
And do you think your experience in the industry, in the hospitality industry, has been invaluable in what you're doing now?
Yeah, because I've done quite formal stuff. You know, but even back in the early 90s, I worked at... I'm laughing because it was the Sheraton Mirage in Port Douglas when, and I had to wear a black bow tie and do that Gerardon work, like cook at the table. My daughter's here and she's laughing. And my son looks.
I heard her before remark to you, Hilary, when you were talking about your job and how everybody said to you how fabulous it was. She said, Mum, I don't think that your job's very fabulous.
No, she does, because she sees. Her name is Iris and my son Jack, they see the nitty-gritty day-to-day work of what my job is, which is a lot of computer stuff, a lot of phone calls, a lot of editing work, getting frustrated about things. And then everyone out there might be going, lucky kids, but they get dragged to a lot of places they don't necessarily want to go to. And sometimes they get a great treat there, but they don't always. And it's like, sorry, guys, yeah, we all want to stay home, but we actually have to go and have a look at this place, or we have to meet. But the fun side is that for them is they've met chefs and they roll their eyes at some of the chefs they've met. And a lot of people might think that's really fun. That's part of the job, and that's, you know, that's lovely. But they see the day-to-day grind and they see how hard I've worked.
Yes.
Because there's been times, I wrote a book a few years ago and that took me away from them on Sundays. Mm. And which isn't fun when you're a kid. You want your mum around.
Yeah.
So they see, and they see a lot of...
As a mum, I'm sure you would have wanted to be with the kids too.
Yeah, yeah. But the books, you know, it was great. Now they're really proud of me for doing that. Yeah. So it all works out, but they know that it's not the most glamorous of jobs, and it's hard work.
Yeah,
for sure. But we've got a few
responses. Oh. Fantastic. This is exciting.
I'm game to go hunting at Chill Out for Bears Club and Leather Pigs. Hope my Steve from Collingwood, member, you're fabulous. I'm going to let Mary Jane go for that one and put that in the hunting. Thanks, but I think you're going to have an awful lot of fun tomorrow. That's all I'll say. Anyway, that's great, Steve. And so we're going to go to the next song, and here we're going to listen to this, another one for all the girls in my life. I have great sisters and great, great girlfriends and great daughter and great nieces, and my son's an honorary.
Oh no, just waving,
and he's just fabulous. This song's called She-Wolf.
Come with us as we take you to all new heights. Joy 94.9.
It's 19 minutes to 2 here on Joy 94.9. You're listening to Cravings, and my name's Hilary McNevin. I'm sitting in for Pete Dillon today, and being my co-host is the lovely Mary Jane Daffy. Mm-hmm. And it's her birthday today. I just have to keep throwing
just
that
in case you all forgot that one.
From half an hour ago. Yeah. And on the line, I have a friend and colleague of mine, Larissa Debetsky, who is the senior restaurant reviewer for The Age and also the senior reviewer for The Age Good Food Guide. Larissa, welcome to Cravings.
Hi, Hilary. Thank you.
Firstly, how's the heat? You're okay in the heat? Sunshine? How are the family?
I'm bunkering down in the air conditioning.
Good girl. Larissa, we've been talking about food writing today, and it's something, and if I may say, you have two, I guess, highly coveted jobs and two significant jobs that I imagine are incredibly hard work. But how did you start out in this food writing world?
Oh, gosh, Hilary. I fell into it.
Yeah.
Do you want the long answer or the short answer?
I know you did law at Melbourne Uni.
I did law at Melbourne.
And did you do journalism?
High school. And then I decided I would rather perish than be a lawyer. So I went and did the postgraduate course at RMIT in journalism. And then I got a cadetship at The Age. So I was just a run-of-the-mill news reporter, you know, chasing state politicians and ambulances and all the rest of it. And I wangled a gig on the Good Food Guide.
Yes.
I went and I shamed myself.
But was that because there was an interest in food, obviously?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yes. At the time I was, you know, it was kind of interesting. I was just coming off the back of being a vegetarian.
You've written about.
I have extensively, I think. Mm-hmm. And I rediscovered the path of carnivorism and food and the joy of food, and I was just really into it. So, and then I was lucky enough to score a gig for the Good Food Guide, and they put me onto the little, you know, the smaller reviews.
Yes.
And each year I got slightly better restaurants to review, and it just snowballed from there. And then, of course, as you know, everyone knows, John Leslie, and left the job that he'd held for about 11 years.
Yes.
And I was lucky enough to be offered the job. So, yeah.
I think it's a great posting. But the first, you and I actually met when you first started that job, and I was helping out with espresso back then.
That's right.
And I remember you, for want of a better expression, copped a lot of flack for the first year or so for that job. And I think, I just think it's interesting if you don't mind talking about that time of your life, because I think people don't realise how hard being a critic can be. So can you give me any examples of what happened, or how you were treated, or what happened at that time, the first year of your reviewing?
I think the first rule I learned is never Google yourself. Okay. I thought, oh, have a look at how I'm doing, how people are receiving me. And yes. I think I wept.
Oh,
but, you know, moving briskly along, I think it is such a tough gig to walk into.
Yes.
Especially when the previous incumbent has been there for such a long period of time and people think they know exactly how that position should be run. You know, every writer has a different voice.
Yes.
So, that was definitely a jarring thing for the readers, and I can understand that. And writing long-form food reviews is... Yeah. Definitely different to writing short, pithy things like we do for the Good Food Guide. So, yeah, it takes a long time.
Sorry to cut you off. It's MJ here. How are you, Mary Jane?
I'm good.
Yeah,
hi.
That's great. Hey, I was just wanting to intervene quickly and ask, do you think that the readers, particularly of your work or that review in Epicure, feel a sense of ownership of that page and how they think that it should have gone or have been, and perhaps that's why the criticism?
Yeah, I think that the readers do have a deep sense of ownership of the page. And food is one of those things everybody eats.
Absolutely.
Everybody has an opinion about food and how it should taste and what a restaurant should be. So it is this great, crazy democracy. And it's wonderful that there are so many voices and so many people who care deeply. But, yes, the criticism at the beginning was a bit hard to take.
Oh, of course.
Has it calmed down now, though? I'm imagining it would have.
I don't Google myself anymore.
Good
Hillary.
Girl.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. But in the structure, when you're saying short, pithy, good food guide writing, and internet writing obviously isn't long form. You write 1,000 words or more every week, is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah, so. Can I ask your opinion on blogging and internet writing? But firstly, blogging in general, what do you think of a food blogger in broad terms? I know there are some bloggers who can write and some who can't, but what do you think of that in the terms of being a critic?
I think that bloggers and food critics are coming at it from two very different points of view. There are very few bloggers who do take that critical stance.
Yes.
And I guess the thing that concerns me is just how many bloggers these days are eating free food and then blogging about it without disclosing the fact. There are, the whole PR industry that's sprung up around food and restaurants knows exactly who to contact for all of those glamorous opening night parties they hold. Mm-hmm. And the number of people who blog about them without revealing that they were there as a guest and so forth, that really concerns me.
Yeah, because it's incredibly unprofessional and unethical, and it's actually you're working as a – you're being a PR if you do that, aren't you? You're not being a blogger. You're not being a writer, I don't think.
Yeah.
And it's I think it's something that's more common than we would think. Would you agree?
I think so. I really don't know how much influence bloggers have. I think they have a lot of influence in their own heads and maybe amongst their little blogging community. Mm-hmm. Whether their influence spreads further than that, I really don't know. Yeah. And then you've got the whole different question of how influential something like Urban Spoon is. Do people actually look at the recommendations on Urban Spoon or not?
I think some people, obviously some people do because it's still there, but I find it can be very damaging because it's very small-minded. Well, that's my opinion anyway, small-minded perspective. But
I agree, I think people are more likely to complain than to praise.
Absolutely, I agree with that.
Is that awful comment, little thing called human nature? It's easy for us to criticise, which is such a shame. But can you tell us, when you approach a restaurant, we were just saying before, once I heard someone recently, I guess it was on Cravings a few weeks ago, and Pete had a blogger, and they were talking about how they walked, as soon as a restaurant opened, it was their right to be able to criticise it. And I'm wondering if... I took that word criticised to be meaning instantly negative. And Mary Jane and I were talking earlier about how when we commissioned a restaurant from an editor to write about, I've never walked in thinking, I'm going to just slam it and think terrible things. So how do you approach a restaurant when you walk in there and how you write about it? Where do you start?
Well, the first thing is and no matter what restaurant I'm going out to, I'm always excited to be going there.
Yes.
I think a lot of people think that I approach my job looking for places to puncture and to damage professionally. It's far from the case. I love eating out at restaurants. I love restaurants.
Yeah.
So, look, I go expecting greatness. Often I don't find greatness, but it's not that I go looking to criticise. But on the other hand, I do see my job very much as a consumer advocacy role. Mm-hmm. I'm not there to support the industry, which some people have told me I should be doing. I'm there to tell people where to spend their hard-earned cash.
Yes.
So I'm very cognizant of the fact that people... I'm working off the Fairfax corporate charge card,
God bless it,
that other people are spending their own money. So it's a really important role to steer people in the right direction, but also to balance that with the interest of the restaurateur and to remember that it's somebody's livelihood that I'm talking about.
Have you ever reviewed a place that was so not up to scratch you chose not to write about it?
No.
Oh, that's good news.
Actually.
Yep.
No, it's always they're the painful ones to write. They can be fun to write, but they're also painful to write. Really, really, the really bad experiences. Mm. But look, meanwhile, it would be unfair to not print about a particularly bad restaurant, I think.
And how do you determine a score? And I know that's a very broad question, but I know it would be something someone might be interested in. You don't have to give a specific name of restaurants, but how does that work for you?
The score, there's an official Good Food Guide breakdown of how many points you apportion to the wine list and how many points to the service and the X factor and everything. I have a very finely honed gut instinct these days.
Yes.
I can just walk out and feel, that was a 14, that was a 15.
Yeah.
Most things are a 13 or a 14. I have been criticised for being... sticking around the 14 a lot, but that's average.
Yeah, and I think a 14's a good restaurant.
14's
really
fantastic.
Yeah.
Anyone who gets a 14, unless they're aiming to be a fine dining gastro temple, should be pretty happy with 14.
I think so too.
I
think so too, but I think as we were mentioning before as well, I think you do a job, don't you, for an audience, for a readership. And you work with an editor to help. I think a lot of people just think you can come in and write about food and throw your opinions out, but it's not the case always, is it?
No, and it's a bit of a collaboration. I work with a great bunch of people, including yourself, and everybody has great knowledge about restaurants, and we're always throwing ideas around and seeking each other's opinions, and I think that's a great thing.
Oh, Larissa, look, thank you so much for being with us today.
Pleasure.
And I hope you enjoy more sunshine this afternoon. And we can read you every week on Tuesday in Epicure and on goodfood.com.au, is that right?
That's right, Hilary.
Thank you, Don. You take care.
Thanks.
Bye. That was Larissa Dubetsky, who is the Senior Restaurant Reviewer for The Age Epicure every Tuesday. And she's also the Senior Reviewer for The Age Good Food Guide. We're just going to go into a little track now.
Joy 94.9.
It's 2 minutes to two and we're at the end of Cravings for another Saturday afternoon. I'm Hilary McNevin and I've had the pleasure of sitting in for Pete Dillon this Saturday the 9th of March, which happens to be Mary Jane Duffy's birthday, my co-host for today. Happy birthday.
Oh, thank you. And it's been an absolute pleasure for me to be here as well. Thank you, Pete, for giving up your airtime so that Hilary and I could take charge.
We can take over the airwaves. You have an announcement to make.
I do. Simon from Collingwood is the lucky winner of the double pass to the RU game for a real food, real wine lunch, Saturday 16th of March, thanks to Fowles Wines in Strathbogie Ranges. So enjoy, Simon. It'll be a hoot, I'm sure.
It'll be great fun. And Pete is back in the chair next week. But before we go, we've got to say thank you to Mary Jane Duffy. Thank you to Pete for coming in. Thank you to Matt, panellist extraordinaire, who really has saved us today.
Yeah, thank you, Matt.
He's been great. And also thank you to Larissa Dubetsky for giving us her time. She's a very busy woman. And to my kids, Iris and Jack, who have actually quietly sat here today and listened to the show. And they've done a great job too. It's not easy to just sit quietly. Fender Bender's coming up next about all things automotive. And so thank you so much. See you soon.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.